Good afternoon, everybody.
Perfect. Thank you.
What's that? Okay, good afternoon, everybody. We'd like to get started. I am Jake Young from Wired. This is my colleague. This is my colleague, Chris Reynolds from Condé Nast Consumer Research. Get close to the mic. Okay, how's that? Yay. All right. I'm Jake Young from Wired. This is my colleague, Chris Reynolds from Condé Nast Consumer Research. We're here today, this afternoon, to talk about the rise of analytics and what it means for online journalism and journalism in general. Just to start out, we want to... Okay, how's this? All right. We want to start out by reminding everybody that this is a conversation, so you raise your hand, ask impertinent questions. We don't want to sit up here and talk for an hour. Just to introduce my own background a little bit, I have worked in magazine development for much of my career. That includes concept testing, consumer testing, all sorts of things like that, much of it at Time Inc. I worked on prototypes and plans for in a relaunch of People on Time Australia and People in Espanol. I worked on the launch of several international editions of InStyle, and later on I worked on a revamp of Reader's Digest. At Wired, I do some of the same things. I run the group that does our cover testing every month. I work on our iPad app, which is our tablet apps, which are almost 2 years old now. And by the way, the guy who invented our iPad app, creative director Scott Dadich, is in the audience right here. Scott, raise your hand. I have also, since late last year, been lucky enough to get to work with Wired.com, mostly on some of the back-end stuff like budget, but obviously a lot of that is driven by the numbers that the site generates. So that's me. I do have one quick question for everybody. Who is here today because they're like really worried about the effect that, you know, analytics and numbers and things like that are going to have on American journalism? Okay. And who came here just to geek out on data? Okay. All right. Chris, this looks like it's your kind of crowd.
All right. So I'm Chris Reynolds. I'm from Condé Nast Consumer Research, as Jake said. My history is that I have been doing digital research in various forms, both on digital media when I was at Digitas, and then moved on to Kraft Foods, led their web analytics practice across most of their U.S. sites and then some of their international sites. Since joining Condé Nast, I've been leading a team that is focused on, it originally was just focused on digital research and web analytics, but since then I've been working with the larger team that deals with all of our print and audience research across the board. And that has been a very broadening experience for me, certainly, but there have been a lot of applications of the digital side of the research that I've been doing in my past to what we're doing on the print side, and that's really what we're here to talk about today. So what I'm going to try to do is lay out a basic kind of groundwork for what we're talking about today, just take you through some of the history and kind of how we see the world at the moment, and then the implications for the future. So feel free to stop me, as Jake said, as I go through any of this, and if you have any questions. So, you know, as Jake mentioned, there's been data around forever for editors. There's been things like reader studies on the reader database, the subscriber database. There's been cover testing. There's been just general surveys out there. There's audience research like MRI that gives you information about just the size and the demographics around your audience. And then, of course, the one that I think probably has had the most impact on a lot of the print journalists out there is just the newsstand sales, because obviously that's what matters. If they see that newsstand sales, is that data going one way or the other, they're obviously going to make adjustments, or at least try to make adjustments. But we're at a point now where you have access, well, not only do you have access to the data, but you're executing in so many different environments. Certainly, as Jake mentioned with Wired, there's apps, their website, They're going to have to continue. They're continuing to focus on their core print product, but ultimately there are multiple different channels of content delivery that users have access to. And with that comes all of the data that you have available to you on those readers and those users. So, you know, it went from basically kind of four fairly basic sources of resources for print journalists historically, to now all of a sudden you have, you know, potentially you have three or four different channels that you're delivering on, and you have probably three or four different pieces of data that you're pulling from each of those, some of those being real-time pieces of data where you know exactly what's going on in your site, either within almost real-time, so a lag of, you know, maybe a few minutes, to some of the tools like Chartbeat and that kind of thing where you have direct access to what's going on live on the site. That the access to that level of data has created, in a way, it's created a new role for editors where you know, they've always had some feedback from the consumer through the various sources that are out there. But now with this constant and real-time feedback that you have access to, they almost have to be not only smarter about the data, but they have to pick and choose what they're going to pay attention to. There's basically this flood of, I mean, we can see on an app exactly what pages they're looking at, how much time they're spending within a page, and that creates this granularity that you never had access to before. The question that I think really that Jake and I are most interested in talking about today is whether or not, especially for long-form journalism, what is the appropriate or what's the appropriate level to pay attention to that data? Should the editors of Wired magazine be making changes based on real-time data that's coming off of their website? Should they take that to change the core platform? Is there applications for that data either in the long term or in the short term? Certainly on the website, they can make optimizations based on what they're seeing in some of their channels, but how much should they be focusing on that on the print side? But really, it puts them in a situation where they almost have to protect their brand, and it moves editors kind of more into that brand marketing space where they have to know what the core of their product is. They have to understand what it is that their core of their readership comes to them for, and they have to almost black out some of the data that they have access to because they know who they're serving and they know who that core is. And if you alienate that core, then you're kind of really going to just lose the overall standpoint and your editorial function as a whole. So it's kind of a unique balance. I mean, I'm of course the data guy telling the editors to ignore the data, but really, it in a lot of situations, especially, and I go back to the fact that there's kind of a difference between newsroom optimization based off data and long-form journalism based on data. But it puts them in a situation where, again, they're really having to find their core and protect what their brand is. And the way that we're seeing this on the business side, how this plays out in the long run, is that if you protect that core and if you protect your, you know, you keep in mind who your audience really is, you're gonna take some of the different channels data in. So you're gonna bring in some of the mobile data. You're gonna bring in some of the data potentially from your iPad app. But you're going to have to find what the core is coming to those different executions for. If it could be something like, with Wired, maybe it's just their blog section is all that the blog section of their website is all that they might want in an app. And you have to pick through the data to develop that segmentation to be able to understand really what the different offerings need to be across the channels. And ultimately, the goal, again, on the business side, is that you have to attract this audience that is extremely valuable for when you're dealing with long-form journalism. That ongoing flow of traffic, like you might have on a news website or just a broader website, isn't necessarily as important. I mean, it's very important to have traffic, don't get me wrong, but the having valuable traffic, and the way that I've been saying it, there's a guy who heads our sales team, our digital sales team at Condé Nast, who always talks about redefining the impression instead of just delivering impressions, making impressions. The way that I kind of think about this is that we're going from just delivering uniques on websites to delivering a truly unique audience on our websites. and how do you maintain, how do you take in the different data sources to be able to deliver that truly unique audience?
Yeah, I mean, we're geeks at Wired, so we love data. You know, we love watching chart beats spike when we're live blogging an Apple product announcement. We love knowing that the 90-day trailing NASDAQ will help predict how our newsstand sales at airports will be. We love our friendly consumer marketing friends. But we also ignore data all the time. You know, with cover testing, cover testing at Wired is a classic sort of A-B testing, two very distinctive covers and two different sets of lines. I try to urge people not to test things that we don't want to run. You know, at least once or twice a year, including next month's cover, we get back results that just don't quite seem right, and we go with our guts. I mean, the basic fact about cover testing is that it's not, you know, a roadmap with the arrows to Toyland on it. It's a directional tool. And we use it exactly that way. I look at cover testing as a tool for disaster avoidance. You know, the sample is small, even though it's balanced and things like that, but the sample is small. But if the very, very strong reaction that you get from the cover test sample is don't do this, we do tend to pay attention to that. At Wired.com, there's obviously much, much, much more data. It's a big, vibrant site. And frankly, you know, more page views aren't going to do us a lot of good. I mean, over time they will, but from month to month they don't do us that much good. What Evan Hansen, who's the editor of Wired.com, tells his people is let's do stories that have impact. And you know, we could parse and do the numbers and figure out, you know, each article that we post, does it make us or lose us money? But that's really not information that you can use in any way. It's the impact. It's getting you know, a 6,000-word story that gets picked up everywhere. That's impact. It's you know, just a lot of things that go towards that enhance the overall Wired brand on the web, and not just, you know, tinkering with one little bit of text or copy. So you know, the real answer is that yeah, we pay a lot of attention to data, and when it comes to allocating resources, I mean, Wired Gadgets and Science do really well. Wired.com. So when there are new resources to spend, Gadgets and Science get the first look for how can they use it. But it's far from. I mean, none of us work, and there's no leaderboard in the Wired.com offices. By the way, do any of you work in offices where there's a leaderboard or some other sort of persistent? Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about that?
At Battle.com, we chart all the smaller blogs, bloggers, channels as a whole. I think it's useful. I mean, when a piece takes off, it has a good battle system, and you have to copy it.
Right.
It easily decides which ones, so you can find the ones that are doing well. For good reasons, they're doing well for
battle. Right. Right. I mean, absolutely, we pay attention to what's getting traffic, what's getting picked up in social media. But, you know, it's there are writers and editors of Wired.com who religiously track their traffic. Then there are others that at least publicly claim not to pay any attention to it. Anybody else who's got a persistent data stream or a leaderboard or something? Yeah.
Ben Popkin, formerly of Consumerist.com at Gawker, of course,
right,
incentivized by your page views, and tracks his ADR stories all the time to figure out how to write the next ones.
Right. So you're using them as a model for what comes next.
Yeah, when I was there, we did.
Yeah, okay.
And that's another good question. I mean, is there anybody else in the room who is working in a situation where you are incentivized or your compensation is based on your actual performance against some of these numbers?
Okay. Well, maybe let's ask, I mean, who's in the room? How many people work in, you know, online journalism or something that would be called content creation? Wow, lots of people. You want to just some of you shout out where you work?
Microsoft.
Okay. 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 All right.
All right.
Okay. And how about marketers or people who are, you know, somehow involved in the ad or sales industry? Okay, a lot fewer. So some of you want to tell us where you're from?
Bob Vila.
Bob Vila. Okay. Got it. Okay. Okay, so for those of you who are in marketing and things like that, what kinds of things do you look at when you're making the decision about a particular brand to put your advertising on? I mean, how important are numbers, and how much more do you pay attention to other aspects of the brand? Yeah.
Vital. I look at compete.com, Comscore.
Right. So is it really driven mostly by the numbers on a site at a brand?
So primarily, it's heavily based on the numbers, but also there are qualitative factors like
right.
brand fit, demographic,
right.
cost.
Right. Okay. Anybody else? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very much based on that. Unfortunately, I don't know if that's always should be the case, but I think. When we think about, Chris mentioned earlier about the defining the impression, like the right impression, you know, ever since we tried to take GRPs from TV and slot them into a digital metric, you know, it's never really worked. So I wish we didn't have to do that, but I think our clients, brands, they really do want to see that scale. They want to see all that data because they know it's available. So I think we'd much rather use other metrics, right, and what the impression is, but we're doing the best of what we got, right?
I mean, the GRP is an interesting topic in itself, in that it puts a different kind of pressure on websites to deliver. And you know, coming from Kraft Foods, where typically all we bought was points on television, and then talking to some of those planners about how you deal with that when you're going into the digital environment, it pushes you into basically low-cost, low, what I would consider kind of low-value environments. And, you know, there was some debate always as to whether or not that made sense. But for products like Kraft's, you know, a lot of that's just, you know, everybody eats cheese. So you kind of had to balance that question of whether or not delivery in bulk or focused delivery really mattered. I think, you know, it's been an incredible transition going from a place like Kraft to a place like Kind of Nast, where you're dealing with really high quality brands. You're dealing with, you know, long form journalism. You're dealing with some of the leading fashion magazines and websites that are out there. But that, again, even on a day to day basis, when we're thinking about how we're going to be able to actually deliver pages and deliver an audience, we get into situations where we have to debate what's the best way to do that. You know, we know slideshows are great on our websites. We also, I mean, we have a lot of celebrity-focused websites. We know that naked celebrities is going to deliver a lot of traffic, and we've seen it time and time again. The problem with that is that, what are you actually delivering when you do that? And people are looking at, you know, 100 pages at a time, but what is that you're actually delivering to the advertiser? And really, that's where our sales team and a lot of the research that we're doing, we're trying to push, the ad buying community into this understanding that the quality of that audience does matter, and that just dumping impressions isn't what you're after. And the other piece that I would like to say, you know, the industry as a whole is moving that way with the viewable impression, with both Comscore and Nielsen coming out with their different capabilities of measuring GRPs and measuring targeted delivery. You know, we're very excited at Kind of Nast as to what that means for us because we do think that the audience that we're delivering is extremely valuable, and because we are thinking like this, we're thinking ahead about the quality of what we're delivering to people.
And we pay a lot of attention to that, obviously in the magazine and online too. I mean, we could produce a different gallery every day of rockets blowing up on the launching pad, which would get a lot of traffic. But we sort of limit ourselves to one quality gallery a day because we don't think that just spewing stuff out there is really what we're about. Yeah.
Do you have any So I work in video games. I work on a game called Halo, and we have a dedicated channel where we program, and it's we don't have the greatest PI, so we don't have this real-time stuff that some of you more sophisticated organizations have.
You speak up.
I've totally lost my voice.
You want to, there's a microphone here if you want to come to, because it sounds like an interesting question.
First off, whoever said they work at The Onion, I just want to say hi. I love The Onion. So I work on a project called Halo, and we have a dedicated editorial channel. And we don't have sophisticated BI tools. We don't have some of the real-time stuff that you guys have all been mentioning. How would you recommend we bootstrap that? How can I best, with limited tools, aside from like this week, this was the most popular video, how can I do that? Help me.
Are you talking about the gathering the data or promoting it?
I'm looking at gathering the data and making decisions based off of it.
Okay.
Is my question clear?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, are you just to make decisions about how you're going to alter the execution?
How I program my editorial.
Right.
Right. I think that starts with, you know, so Halo is a very big and distinct brand, but I think the question, you know, it starts with why do people come to the site, right? What are they looking for? And, you know, I don't know enough about your users to be able to speculate, but I know, you know, at Wired.com, they come because, I mean, a lot of people come because they follow a link, but a lot of, you know, the largest, you know, sort of single landing place at Wired.com is the homepage, which means people are going there first to see what the whole brand has to offer. So, you know, that at least is a place to start. You know, what are people, where are they going? What are they spending time on?
I mean, my thought on that is that, you know, the iPad has been around now for, I mean, almost 2 years now. The Condé Nast started executing on it about a year and a half ago. We started having data on it probably about a little over a year now, like a year and 2 or 3 months. I feel like it's a very similar situation in that it's a new environment where the measurement tools aren't built out the way that you might hope. And that's where we're obviously working to develop those capabilities, and we've had, you know, great partnership with Adobe to be able to actually work with them to define how we're actually going to capture some of the data that we need. But, you know, the focus I think that we're going with right now as we try to communicate out the value of that audience to the marketplace is really going and looking at the demographic side of it. And that's going to take, for you, I feel like that'll take a different, you'll almost need to work on developing some sort of CRM component to the program to be able to actually understand who those people are that are playing, and then be able to package that up for anyone who's interested in going after that audience. But, you know, in a situation where there is a lack of information about the exact channel that you're working on and how to make optimizations around it, certainly that's where you start looking into situations where is the conversation going on. One of the main channels that we have for consumer feedback right now on the iPad is the iTunes store. It's not ideal, but it's, you know, there's at least some feedback there. You know, we're working on developing other consumer feedback loops, but in the short term, you kind of have to make do with the opportunities that you do. I mean, luckily, we're in the era of social media, so you can. I'm sure you're probably hearing about certainly what people don't like through that. But you have to find different feedback loops in situations like that.
Do you handle it differently, or do you look at differently data, or that is people doing something with the content, or people actually commenting? Weight than that, just, you know, coming in through search and, you know, maybe taking a glance, and you don't know what they did or if they even read it, kind of thing. I mean, I would think that that's more valuable data.
Yeah, and you know, we are working hard on both of those channels. You know, we hired a community editor about 5 months ago who is focused on all the social media tools. We've got, you know, 1.3 million Twitter followers, more than 500,000 on Google Plus, Facebook. You know, we're pushing all of that with the goal of getting up to 20% of our traffic through social media links, you know, by the end of the year. We also are working hard on community on some of the channels at Wired.com, really trying to give the people who come to the site some of the same tools that the journalists at Wired have, with the notion that, you know, a really vital sort of comments subculture means that you've really, really engaged people, and once again, that you're having impact, that you're not just pushing out stuff. Yeah.
You seem to be taking questions, so I'm going to...
Sure, no, please.
Go ahead.
She's been...
I'm an editor at Yahoo, and actually I started my journalism career as an intern at Wired Magazine back before they were combined with the website.
Well, so, welcome back.
Thanks. And I was wondering, you know, I feel very fortunate to have a ton of data. We spend a lot of time looking at it. But I was wondering if you've been, especially with the long-form stuff, moving more towards metrics like time spent, and also if you use things like abandonment rates, especially for longer-form articles where people have to kind of paginate through 6 or 7 pages, or for videos, like, do you look at, okay, people watched the first 45 seconds of this, or they gave up in the middle of the ad? You know, because I know both online and when I pick up a magazine, sometimes I get through a whole article.
Right.
And are you using that kind of data, because you have it online, to make decisions about what kind of content you look at for long form?
Yes and no. I mean, you know, we're fortunate that, you know, our Danger Room blog, which covers security, routinely does 2,000 and 3,000 and 5,000 word stories that get a lot of traffic and a lot of notice. But yeah, there's a feedback loop actually between the platforms. We look at how much time, you know, people spend with a video online, and we're starting to feed that back into what our video strategy and the type of video that we're going to have on the iPad. Even though they're very different experiences, we think that there's a lot in common there. So yeah, that's an example where, you know, one platform's informing another, and we're constantly looking at, you know, there's no point in creating content that people aren't going to watch, right, or that they're not going to read. So, you know, again, we're fortunate that we can do the sort of serious long form things, and that gets a lot of traffic along with the gallery of dogs diving. So, you know, it's a combination.
And I feel like the tablet, especially for us in a situation where the execution is so similar across print and the tablet environment, we're definitely looking much more at time spent, looking at things like dwell time, for a specific page, how much time is. We're trying to define where the cutoff points are for, is this a good page to get somebody to stop? And then if they do stop, how long can we get them to stay there for? It brings in all of these very bizarre questions when you're talking to editors like Jake with, you know, we're going to be able to start to see exactly how many people made it all the way through an article. And, you know, over time, then we're going to be able to start to see at the author, at the journalist, the author level, how much time they are attracting to each of their different stories, and that it creates some strange scenarios.
And you know, we were talking about this last night as we were prepping, and it, you know, that sounds very punitive and really scary. But I mean, you have to remind yourself that certainly at Wired.com, no one person creates a piece of content. That somebody assigned it, somebody wrote it, somebody edited it. So, you know, if there's one journalist who's not performing or whose posts don't perform, then yeah, you should investigate that. But it's wrong to say this is just going to be a tool to knock people out of their jobs.
Hi, I'm Eitan Horowitz. I'm a mobile editor at CNN. So kind of following up on what you've been talking about, I'm curious with editorially how you're using some of the mobile analytics, particularly tablet, to inform, you know, more what you're doing? I mean, of course, you have your print magazine, which is, you know, has everything that the print does in the tablet, but then it has a lot of new stuff, and how
right.
you're using those analytics to figure, okay, we do, you know, we know that this does well, so we do, you know, this on tablet. I don't know if you have mobile web as well or just tablet.
But. There's Mobify for Wired.com. You know, I'm going to turn this over to you, but I mean, mobile is still, I think, the number five source of traffic at Wired.com now, but it grew by more than 1,000% last year. So we're obviously going to be paying a lot of attention to that. And, you know, right now where it's just making sure that things format properly. But, yeah, I think over time it'll be we'll start to think about, you know, how do we adapt the content to make it more readable and sort of usable on mobile devices?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's really two different parts to that question. On the mobile site, on the mobile site or mobile apps, and in the tablet, there's certainly a lot of findings that we're taking away from it and applying directly to it. But then that's where I was going when I was saying that idea of the editors at Wired almost have to block some of that out, because the user is in such a different need state when they're going to either coming through, you know, maybe their Facebook app where they saw a link and they come to an article, or they go directly to the site and they've got very different intentions. And unfortunately, the way the quantitative data works is that it's typically delivered in averages. And when you've got averages like that, it may lead you down the wrong path just because you are seeing something. You're seeing something especially as mobile becomes a bigger part of the traffic, you might see something that pushes you kind of in the wrong direction because you're letting the influence of that different need state or a different audience affect what you're potentially going to deliver for the overall audience.
Hi, I'm Morgan Silver Greenberg, and I have a background in complex systems, worked with Wolfram Alpha, kind of do big data stuff, but mostly in the cultural realm. And contrary to how it's framed, I'm very much a hyper-emotional human. and so I know that you guys are talking about these brands where, you know, with Wired, for instance, Jacob, you were saying that you guys know what you want to do, and therefore there are certain things that you can start to discount data-wise. I was wondering what sort of innovations are happening on the data side to sort of start to quantify this is the sort of traction that we want, whether that's like going out and saying, you know, looking at the social graph, these are the people that we're trying to hit, these are our targets, these are like high impact. You know, I know that the pharmaceutical industry has a way of ranking doctors for the ones who will be most likely to, you know, make it so that other doctors write more prescriptions. So, you know, on the editorial side and on the cultural side, even like on the fashion side, how do you decide, well, as much as, you know, we're not hitting these metrics, we're hitting these ones that are more important to us? I was wondering if there's innovation on the data side.
Certainly on the data side, we are, as an organization, we're developing new ways to look at the audience that is coming into our various sites. And it does. It ultimately means that there are components of it that you have to not account. You can't. You basically have to take out parts of the overall data set because it does indicate things that you don't necessarily think are accurate. In terms of you know, true data developments, I would say the big pieces are really around the mobile component of it, and because of the, again, going back to the tablet, because of the abilities that we have in the tablet, and that granularity that you have to access that content, it changes the way that you might apply it on a larger scale. And you have to create segmentation across the board. I mean, that's the key to all of this, is that you have to understand the different segments of the users, and you can't look at just average page depth for a website. That's just not, those are metrics that certainly the publisher cares about, but on the editorial side, that's something that just, you can't worry about that really, because it'll push you in directions that you don't want to go.
Yeah, I mean, page views is a background number that we obviously, I mean, we like to brag about ours, but it's not really something that from day to day we're totally focused on.
But is there a piece of data that you are focused on that is kind of speaking to that?
You know, we a piece of data? No. I mean, I think it's a roundup of all sorts of things, including, you know, the social media pickup and sort of the pickup in other media and things like that. You know, as long as we maintain and grow the base, we don't really have to focus on, you know, every little what, you know, the impact of every single article that we push out. I mean, there are between 60 and 100 articles every day to try to track all. We can track them, but what good does it do to track every single one every day?
So on the websites, some of the innovations that we're looking at are around just the because viewability, visibility is such an important component. We're looking at different providers that can help us understand at a page-by-page level or a story-by-story level, if you will, whether or not you can actually deliver viewable components of the page. The other piece, the other big development in the last, I'd say, maybe year and a half, has been the ability to take some of the known kind of panel providers out there and apply it at a page level, especially when you're trying to deliver specific, you know, valuable components of an audience. Having that ability to look at a page level, or at least a projected page level of who that audience is, certainly can help us define overall editorial strategies.
Thanks. Hi there, Ben Popkin again, freelancer formerly of Consumerist and Consumer Reports. What red flag metrics do you look at to warn yourself when pure traffic grabs are eroding the core audience and brand, and how much does it just come down to your gut and experience?
Could you talk just a little bit more about the first part of the question?
Right. So earlier you were talking about how you don't want to just put rocket slideshows up every day, and you know that at a certain point that's going to be eroding your core user base. So I'm asking, what are the red flag metrics when you realize, okay, we thought this editorial direction was good on this series of stories, this kind of push, but now it turns out these numbers are dropping or increasing, let's back off.
One of the big numbers for us is the relationship between number of pages and time per page, basically. If we start seeing that number is, and again, a lot of it has to do with the fact that we have a lot of kind of slideshow-focused websites, that if people crank through those slideshows, so if we are starting to see that is, you know, the majority of the traffic, and it's not just like an attribution of the page viewing, it's also an application of the overall time spent to the page viewing to help us understand how quickly people are cranking through it. That being said, I mean, that's an engaged audience in a way. It just depends on what you're trying to actually deliver. The other... I think one of the other big numbers that we're looking at is basically bounce rate. Mm-hmm. If we see that a source is delivering traffic that is people that are just interested in a single topic, and frankly, you know, Wired is a great example of, they have a fairly significant bounce rate on their website, but they've also got a fairly significant blog component to their site, so people are coming in for a single story and then they're leaving, which is not necessarily bad traffic. It's just the ability for Wired to be able to capitalize on that traffic and kind of the way that we identify whether or not that is the core audience, is whether or not they're moving on to read anything else, or if they were just happen to be passing by and kind of grazing on a subject.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Gretchen Grant, general manager of BobVila.com, and my question relates to how you synthesize the huge amount of data that's available to you. So, you know, you've got your pot of what's really going on the website from Omniture or Google Analytics or whatever. You've got your ComScore about what's happening on the competitive scene or Hitwise. You've got stats from your channel on YouTube. And if you have Add This or a provider of social sharing features, that's another dashboard. So how do you bring it all together for actionable learnings to develop your editorial strategy? Is that a person's job? Is that kind of everybody's job? How does that happen?
It's kind of everybody's job. Our community editor tracks social media really, really carefully, and he has a PhD in neurology, so he's really good at
I need one of those
stats and data. And then, you know, yeah, individual editors track different things. You know, we get good reporting sort of on a monthly basis from Condé Nast Corporate, but it's also, you know, there's this kind of undefinable thing that we talk about, you know, how wired is that story? And people come in for interviews, and at some point you'll be asked, how wired are you? And it's just sort of we know it when we see it and when we feel it, and that, you know, that's sort of our gut, and we use that almost as much as the data. Actually, much more than the data. So,
and Wired, and there are a few other brands at Condé that have. I mean, we very much appreciate Wired's team in our department. There's a group of people on my team that basically take the data and look at it on a monthly and even more frequent basis to be able to understand really if there are like significant changes going on, not necessarily to the level of what the editors are looking at, but we're trying to, there's a wide kind of, depending on the editorial team that you're dealing with, there's kind of a wide kind of comfortability with the data. You know, we always, when we send stuff to Wired, we always get nervous because we know that they know it better than we do. So, but when, you know, there are other brands where we're just trying to help them get to that point where we're just trying to show, you know, at a broader level, you can pull together different sources of data and understand what's going on with your audience as a whole.
Yeah, Chris Anderson, our editor-in-chief, loves nothing more than arguing about whether a regression analysis has been done right or not. It's really kind of crazy.
Thank you.
Sure.
Hey, I'm Sam Baldwin, web editor at Mother Jones Magazine. And I'm totally addicted to Chartbeat. I spend all day on it. And one thing I've noticed is that at the Business Insider website, it's like a fairly high traffic site. They have a little widget in the right-hand column that links to their Chartbeat page, and so it's totally public. And I actually kind of prefer navigating Mother Jones via our Chartbeat page. It lets me know where people are right now, like what, you know, what action items are, so what's actually being read. And so now I read Business Insider through their Chartbeat page, and I was wondering if you guys would ever do that, would ever make real-time analytics available to fans, to readers as, you know, a navigation mechanism. You know, it's essentially the evolution of the Times most read list, you know, and what the risks might be, and so why you wouldn't do that, because as far as I know, only Business Insider is doing it. So.
I mean, I think you could. My concern would be is that, again, you're pulling yourself towards the middle when you do that. I mean, those real-time data delivery sources are, you know, aggregated quantitative data that is basically averaged, and you know, as a organization where we have very distinct brands and we're trying to attract very distinct audiences, certainly Wired's trying to do that. Pulling yourself to the middle ultimately just, you know, it pushes you in a direction that your CPMs are going to, in the end, you're never going to be able to charge a CPM that you might be able to charge if you are protecting your brand like an editor of Wired might be doing.
You know, good answer.
Matt Blasco, working on the agency side, representing some brands at Euro. Chris, couldn't agree with you more on the segmentation piece. And we're kind of jealous of the role you guys have because you have content people actually want versus the brands trying to push down their throat. So very interested in, you mentioned real-time analytics and numbers. Curious what your real-time actions would be. For instance, like if you're seeing certain trends popping in Google or in social, what are you guys recommending? Are the editors pushing this out to their fan bases to read it? Or stories that are from years ago that may be relevant, are you pushing that out or buying keywords or anything to make that push more enhanced?
Well, you know, a lot of that goes to homepage curation. You know, we can move things around. We can keep things on the homepage that's continuing to get traffic. We are adding, you know, links to archive pieces from both the website and the magazine, you know, so that people can have more context. And, yeah, our community editor and our social media editors are pushing things out, pushing out. I mean, I'm now on sort of a campaign to get the magazine editors to keep reminding the web editors that we did this story in print 2 years ago. And, you know, it may not drive a lot of traffic, but, if you get somebody to read a piece on Wired.com and then suck them into a piece or two that came from the magazine or another Wired.com article, you're way ahead of the game. So sort of keyword purchases above my pay grade, but all the other things, yes. No mic? Okay. I will.
Matt, I would add to that that there, because of the focus of a lot of the editorial content that we have, it's kind of event-driven. So, you know, there were a couple of executions that went on across the company last summer where, there were even e-books developed off of significant events. Now, that's not necessarily, I mean, we obviously saw spikes in traffic around that, but they were more kind of societal changes that were going on that there were new products that were developed off of that. You know, whether or not you would have to use the data to be able to understand that, certainly the death of Christopher Hitchens last fall was a huge story that Vanity Fair certainly pulled together a bunch of information and a bunch of different content and optimized their site to be able to focus on that. And that was certainly from something that we immediately saw. The tough part is then taking it. You know, I see kind of for us the cornerstones of our brand, of our executions are the print and the website. The tough part is then outside of the website taking that and obviously there are features like that on in print, but because of the time lapse, that's where it comes the value of real time data. It's tough to make significant changes to those kinds of executions, which is really where you're dealing with a kind of a core. You have to focus on what the core audience is wanting, not necessarily the spike around somebody's death or the Oscars or something like that.
Sure. But again, I mean, as with Christopher Hitchens, we did in about 3 days did a digital special issue on the death of Steve Jobs, pulling together five great stories that we had done over the years, and a long sort of tribute piece written by Stephen Levy that we turned around on less than a weekly schedule, and that was it was big on the website and it would sold really well as well.
But there's a ton of opportunity for that, absolutely. Especially when you think about some of the other brands that we have, like the New Yorker, where you have,
deep archives.
Deep archives on topics that, keep resurfacing.
And it can just be pushed out really quickly.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, guys. Rajan Shah from Add This, happily on Bob Vila and many of your Condé Nast properties. Two quick questions. One's around content recirculation and how you use your 20, 25 brands to get users from one page, one site, one domain to another and sort of use that traffic, the eyeball, and retain it. Your thoughts on sort of recircling that eyeball across properties. Second question real quick is around social and the paradigm that I've got tweet and I've got like and I'm done and I can track all of my social interactions, social activity because of those two sort of gorilla buttons on page. What about the address bar URL copy? And, when I take the URL and put it in IM or just send it to my wife because I don't want to spread it to Facebook or I don't want to tweet about it. How are you guys looking at those kinds of analytics? And we have some thoughts around that, but I just want those two thoughts from you guys.
I mean, mostly that's what we're looking at, people that are coming directly to the site without a specific referral. I mean, that's obviously really important to us. We think of those as kind of our people that are most aware of our brands. I mean, we don't really have huge awareness problems with our brands, but that is kind of the indicative of the people that know who you are and know what they're coming for. And that's where I say those are probably the people that are most important to understand exactly where they're going and what they're doing on the site, because they are telling you, they are the people that have an expectation as to what you're going to deliver and then find it or go and see it. In terms of the first part of your question.
Content research. I mean, Parade Magazine, for example, is doing a great job of that.
I mean, I would not say that we're doing a ton of it. It's something that I think we certainly need to do more of. That takes a you know, the brands at Kindle Nast have historically been fairly
siloed.
Autonomous, I was going to say.
Autonomous,
yeah.
Very good.
There we go. Yeah.
So that concept of pushing the traffic between each other and sharing content like that is it's still kind of in its infancy, and you know, the editors are really somewhat concerned about it. So, but it's definitely a big opportunity when you think at a global scale or a corporate scale, what kind of the depth of the content that we have available to us.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Hi, my name's Adam. I'm also on the agency side. Jacob, you mentioned A-B testing for the magazine covers earlier, and I'm curious what type of testing you guys do on the websites, either multivariate or A-B, or what types of tools you use?
I mean, it's easy to experiment from day to day on the website. I don't know that there's any specific program. We tinker with design and UI all the time. And I think, you know, because that's relatively easy, it's sort of ongoing. Mm-hmm. So
is that like actually splitting it, you know, randomly across, you know, incoming users, or just sort of tinkering looking at the analytics?
It's more tinkering. Yeah, okay, I mean, gotcha. You were telling me about.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're looking at a couple different tools to do something like, to do things like that. Yeah. Again, that goes back to the issue of. There's a mix of art and science here, and the editorial staff is kind of the art side, and they have a real focus, and they have a way that they want to deliver the content, and going in there and being able to on the fly manipulate it through basically a kind of a secondary site is certainly from the testing side and from the data side very exciting. It comes down to whether or not you have that kind of flexibility from your editor, that they are open to that kind of idea. I mean, it certainly may get somebody to go through more pages or recirculate through more of the content, but they're giving up some control of what they're actually delivering.
But now that we know about that, I think you know, Evan Hansen, who's the editor of the website, and his crew will be very interested in that.
Hey guys, Matt Bean from Rodale. We publish. On the same platform you do now, Adobe, with Men's Health, Women's Health, and others. And I'm just curious, I know with Site Catalyst you have a deep insight into how users consume the magazine product. In the past, we just basically thought they would read it from front to back, when in reality, you know, many people tear out all the sent strips and read it from back to front or jump around. So with the flow analysis in Site Catalyst, I'm just curious if you can provide some insights into how users are consuming this digital tablet content distinct from the magazine product.
We have been, I personally, because having a much more digital background, I've been amazed by, I mean, it's somewhat kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. The execution that we're delivering does look like a magazine, but I've been amazed by the fact that front-to-back consumption that we know took place in the magazine is what we're seeing on the digital version of the magazine as well. It's unbelievably consistent across issues, across brands. I would say the one outlier is the New Yorker. Right.
Which is why you moved some page or ad adjacencies deeper with.
Exactly. And we saw, you know, some of that has to do with the fact that there is some of the execution that's involved there, some of their execution of their cover, and that they've manipulated it a little bit differently than some of the other brands. But also it has to do with the fact that audience is, there are other mind-blowing numbers that come out of that in terms of certainly time spent is, just think how long it takes you to read a New Yorker article. Their time spent numbers like I've never seen before. So certainly it varies a little bit by brand, but in general, for the most part, we're seeing unbelievably consistent consumption like you would expect out of a magazine.
Thanks. Hi there. Jonathan, just a developer. Two quick questions. First one, you haven't mentioned anything about heat maps. Is that something that you don't really use, or you've tried and then you haven't got any use out of it? Or is it more to do with the kind of design of and the kind of community editing? And then the second question, not really analytics, but do you look, or is the direction you're going delivering stories that are recommended by your friends? Is that a part of the kind of recommendations through your network? Is that something you find is going to become a lot bigger on your kind of homepages or not?
Okay, can you speak up just a little bit more?
Sorry. Do you want both questions again?
No, the second question.
The second one. First one was heat maps, and the second one is basically stories recommended through your network. So if I log in, whether it's through Facebook or Twitter, and I'm at Wired, is your direction of pushing a lot more stories of what my friends read, is that something that's very, is that working well for you?
Well, you know, some of that, so again, we do between 60 and 100 stories a day, and some of that's driven, you know, by the size of the staffs in the various channels. But, you know, Wired.com at this point is still really very much built on a newsroom model. People do develop stories over time and things like that, but a lot of things are very reactive during the day, particularly in gadgets and particularly in science. So, you know, it's, yeah, we pay attention to what people are reading. That will give you will help you define what's in the news. But we've got, you know, almost 40 reporters and editors at Wired.com who are basically running a newsroom.
So. And then to the heat maps question. Some. We don't use it a lot. You know, there are a few tools out there that do not necessarily like true eye tracking heat maps, but they do like mouse tracking heat maps. Some. Not a lot. I mean, the I would say we use the eye tracking heat maps more for when we're doing full-on redesigns or we're doing overall usability studies to help inform just general layouts. I don't think on a consistent basis we're doing it a lot. You know, I just saw a vendor out there that's asking users to turn on their webcams while they're actually using a website so that they can do the eye tracking at a broader basis. I think there are some implications there that are very cool. But I don't know. I would have a hard time opting into that if it were me. I wouldn't do that. But anyway.
Hi, my name is Dana Cavan. I'm with the Chicago Tribune. There's a general thought in our newsroom that we should shield reporters from traffic stats around their stories, just because we don't want them to obsess over them or get them down. I'm wondering if you ever use traffic to motivate your reporters and how you kind of balance that fine line.
I mean, I think the journalists are motivated by traffic. I'm going to pull a little bit of a cop-out here and say I haven't been working with Wired.com long enough to go through a full sort of review cycle. I know that we watch it, but, you know, it, to my knowledge, it's not, you know, sort of spike or die. The Wired.com editors are all sophisticated enough that they can find out their own stats if they want to. It's just a question of, you know, who pays how much attention to it, and some people obsess and some people claim to never, ever look at it. So,
okay. Yeah. One of the things that you mentioned to me recently was the fact that having web data almost creates a situation where you can kind of, especially on the print side, it almost creates a little bit of protection because you can say, you know, well, there we know all this other activity over here.
Right.
It was an interesting use of the data that I wasn't expecting that he kind of let me in on, but it's definitely a different way to look at it.
Anybody else? Yeah.
I came here as a PR guy wondering, for us, we pitch reporters, and I've been told on the phone straight out that story won't get enough clicks. I should probably inform my readers, but it's not going to help me reach my goals. So how do you work with the staff, or what advice do you have for PR people that know they have good stories, they know it's news that should be consumed, and I guess on top of that, that's kind of brought us in more into a paid media versus an earned media, and how do you work with your groups on, or how do you view paid media versus earned media?
So I'm married to a publicist, and I'm always really nice to them. But I mean, I think it works both ways. I've never heard anyone say that won't get enough clicks. I'm not going to do it. I think, you know, it's a lot of it. Is it a good pitch? Is it a really good pitch? Is it aimed at, you know, the journalist who you're trying to pitch? And then just again, certainly at Wired.com, a lot of it comes down to time. Do I have the time to stop what I'm doing and, you know, take on something new that isn't going to, maybe isn't an exclusive and maybe is only good for today. It's just a tough call.
Hi there, Steve Pohl. I work for an analytics provider, and I've been sort of slightly surprised to hear you guys talk about having to ignore certain data sets. And also I was kind of interested by you talking about not wanting to be dragged to the middle. But for me, that maybe says you've got the wrong data. And I think that's probably the fault of people like me. But I want to know, is there other data that you'd like to have that you can't get that would actually be more useful and wouldn't have those problems?
Yeah, I mean, the ability to do more of the segmentation to be able to understand that core of the audience, whether or not that is people that have paid for it or if it's people that are we just know are kind of the, it comes down to the fact whether or not this is marketable traffic. And that's where I'm saying the combination of demographic data and the analytics behavior is very important for us going forward. It's going to be very important for us.
Is that primarily kind of geodemographic segmentation, or is that kind of interests and behaviors?
I mean, yes. I would say even to start with, it's just basic demographics, you know, age and income and that kind of thing. And being able to tie that to real-time activity, that is... there's just a sample size issue there, but that is ultimately the kind of thing that for somebody who's not just going after a broad reach, that's the kind of information that we need to be able to help inform editors at the various brands.
Okay, they're giving us the wrap it up sign back there. Thank you all very much. Great questions.